And welcome back to Coast with our special guest, Steve Oxtokolnis. And we're talking about his book, Practical Augmented Reality. It's about virtual reality, and it's, of course, about augmented reality. So we'll talk more about that and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll talk with Lisa Barnett about your Akashic Records. But this hour, we'll take your calls with Steve Oxtokolnis and his work, Practical Augmented Reality. We're talking about virtual reality. I think these medical applications are fantastic, Steve.
Yeah, they really are. There's some powerful, powerful stuff that's happening in this field that a major application area, for instance, which has doctors and surgeons extremely excited, is the ability to use these tools for surgical simulation and procedure planning. So as an example, several hospitals, including Mayo Clinic, UCLA's Medical Center, and a handful of others have begun planning surgical procedures with the high-end VR systems where they use a stereoscopic head-mounted display to navigate through 3D models of a specific patient's anatomy, which has been built from, for instance, MRI and CT scans, and looking, for instance, for the safest path to a hard-to-reach tumor. Others have begun using imagery overlaid onto the surgeon's real view of the patient's body, and this is particularly useful in like minimally invasive surgical techniques where the doctor's attempting a complex 3D positioning task, maybe with an instrument that's already inserted into the body. On the other side of the spectrum, there's a small company based in Silicon Valley that's known as One Caring Team, which has developed some really unique adjunct therapies for individuals that are suffering from dementia and Alzheimer's. And they're seeing some powerful results just in the reaction of these people to these simulations that they're creating. And George, there's one that I really want to point out here, and given the times that we're in, researchers at the University of Southern California and the Naval Hospital in San Diego and a couple little small companies have put together treatment solutions using virtual reality for soldiers that are suffering from post-traumatic stress.
Jeez, how would that work?
So one of the simulations is called Virtual Iraq, and the patient goes into the clinician's office. They put on a head-mounted display. Perhaps they're holding a mock weapon. And the therapist can start a simulation which recreates the basic traumatic situation that's causing the patient difficulty. So, for instance, a roadside bomb going off, which severely injures or kills a member of your squad, or some type of an ambush in a small village. But all of this is taking place in the safety of the therapist's office. And the system works so well, in fact, that over 50 VA medical centers around the country are now using this as an experiential therapy, or as a therapy for individuals that are suffering from PTSD.
Jeez,
this is known as exposure therapy, and it also extends to other phobias like the fear of heights or the fear of flying. And there's a company, for instance, in Decatur, Georgia, known as Virtually Better, that has a number of these utilities that are openly available for sale.
Exciting applications, to be sure. Some people report getting sick, dizzy, strange feelings like that. Is that going to be able to get cured?
It is. let me give the listeners an idea of what causes this reaction. So if you can imagine being on the inside of a boat in a storm, your inner ear or your vestibular system is telling you that you're moving around, but you don't have the normal corresponding visual cues, such as if you were up on deck watching, for instance, the deck moving against the horizon, seeing the waves. So that's motion sickness. Simulator sickness, or VR sickness, is the inverse of this. That is, you have a very real visual sensation of motion, but you don't have the normal corresponding inner ear cues. And it's this disconnect or this mismatch of the normal combination of sensory information that's going to the brain that researchers believe is a major factor in this dizziness that you mentioned. Other contributing factors include, for instance, a poor refresh rate of the display, jerking of the images from slow position sensors, not keeping up with your movement, or even the perception of flickering in the far periphery. But by and large, if you have a system that's running correctly and the simulations are designed correctly, most people who experience this side effect can actually very quickly adapt to these displays with just a few short uses.
Good. What other countries, Stephen, are trying to use VR or augmented reality for weaponry?
It would
probably
be easier to list the ones that don't.
Really?
Absolutely. For instance, a major player in this field right now is China. There's not only are there a variety of companies that have started in China that are developing or advancing some of the core enabling technologies, but they're also pouring tremendous amount of venture capital into U.S. companies to try and help advance the technology, in that they experience the same problems that we experience in terms of the hard applications for these, for instance, in industry and medicine. And they're looking for the same solutions. They're also looking to firmly establish their footprint and, you know, dominate as much of the field as they can. And so there's many, many countries around the world that are trying to leverage this across Europe, across Asia, North America, obviously.
How would you use this in defense?
How would I use it in defense?
Yes.
So
military defense.
The Navy is using this, for instance, to train on the use of shipboard weapon systems. We've already talked about the applications that are being used by the U.S. Army to train nine-man rifle squads in how to maneuver around different types of obstacles, which the same technology is also being used by police departments across the United States. So the FBI, where they have simulation facilities where you get a group of people that put on the head-mounted displays and go through the different actions that they need to refine movement as a group. There's also dismounted soldier applications that are just now being deployed, where you will have a single-eye monocle that flips down from the helmet that displays tactical information that soldiers need in the field. For instance, where are your teammates located? Getting information from either space-based sensors or airborne observation platforms, being able to overlay that key information so that the soldiers have an increased level of situational awareness on the battlefield, and ultimately the goal is to dominate the battle space through the use of information.
Will this be used also for, like, traveling? If somebody doesn't have the money to go to Vegas, they would go to a virtual reality situation and see shows as if they're sitting in a Vegas theater, or they're playing blackjack or something right there on a virtual table?
We can even go further than that. For instance, the NBA this year is incorporating special cameras at many of the games that you can then watch through your stereoscopic head-mounted displays.
So like you're right there.
Well, like you're right there. And so if you can imagine it, it's in this particular application area. If you can imagine it, you can get one of these specialized cameras there that can film the activity. It's genuinely possible. Now, even just a few years ago, a company based in Silicon Valley known as Jaunt, they make these 360 cameras. They put a couple of these on stage at a Paul McCartney concert and then one out in the audience. They film the entire concert like this. Now, you can go to the Google Play Store and download this video of Paul McCartney playing Live and Let Die, and you can be standing directly next to him as he plays this.
I love this.
On the piano, you can look to your right and you can see his drummer. You can look up and see the scaffolding with the lights, or look out and see the audience, you know, with the flash pots going off. And it's a very compelling visual and audio sensation of being present at that event.
Will you be able to interact with the people who have passed on, like Sinatra or Michael Jackson, at these virtual reality events?
Again, if somebody can model it, then it's distinctly possible.
Then it's possible.
Yes.
Let's go to some of the calls for you. Joe in Long Island, New York, welcome to the program. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Steve. This reminds me of that film Jumper, but
My question would be, this giving added context or a different context to, like, just personal decisions. I envision this going into, like, dating. And my other question would be, could you virtual reality going to Jurassic Park, even though Jurassic Park is not an actual reality?
Here again, if somebody, I'm going to start with the second portion of your question first. If somebody can model the experience, you know, not only the geometry of the model, but be able to program in the appropriate movements and make a very compelling experience, absolutely, it can be done. But none of this stuff creates itself. And so there has to be a team of people that actually sit down, plan it out, start the geometric modeling, and so on. And it's a labor-intensive effort, but if you can envision it and you have the resources to put in to be able to develop it, then you most certainly can develop a Jurassic Park type of experience. Or, for instance, you know, letting somebody experience a simulation of movement of animals across the Serengeti or anything like that. So on the virtual reality dating side...
Yeah, will somebody fall in love with a virtual reality person? Cheap date.
You know, I think that there's a distinct possibility that things like this will be taking place. And one of the primary players that will likely be making something like this happen is Facebook. They, a few years ago, paid nearly $2 billion, that's billion with a B, $1 billion for a small company called Oculus that makes the virtual reality headsets. And given their, you know, their presence in social media and so on, it would be a natural progression to apply these technologies in a manner that brings people together. And I would think that there's a very high likelihood that that moves in the direction of some type of a virtual dating service.
Isn't it conceivable, Stephen, that one day people just won't even have to leave the confines of their house or apartment, and they will be able to just sit back and do anything from their virtual reality machine?
That's a distinct possibility, but I've been in the field for over 20 years, and I cherish the ability to, you know, personal contact, you know, the feeling of having, you know, the arm of a real woman around your shoulders, or to hear her whisper in your ear, and so on. And
or to get in a real nice car and drive away. But if it seems so real in the virtual world, I mean, would people take that trade opportunity? I mean, if it's 90% of reality, let's say, they may go for it.
They may go for it, but I don't see in my lifetime the fidelity of the experience being enough to compel me to stay inside of my home.
Okay.
But
okay.
There, I can definitely see, for instance, some shut-in individuals and those that can't get out that would leverage this technology to the max in order to try and expand their ability to interact with people.
I mean, what about a person, for example, who happens to sadly be a paraplegic? They have no ability to move their arms or legs. Would virtual reality literally give them a second chance at life?
Absolutely. I can definitely see the technology being used in that capacity even today, in that there are a variety of multi-user or massively multi-user simulations that people can sign up for and start to interact with people, even if they're physically limited in doing so.
Sam is truck driving in Texas. First-time caller. Sam, go ahead.
How you doing, guys? How y'all doing tonight?
Good, Sam.
Yeah, I was 10 years ago when I started truck driving, they actually used the virtual reality simulator for the truck drivers to see how they react in tight situations.
So you imagine how good it would be now.
Imagine now, exactly. But they did use that. But I remember it 10 years ago, stick shift and everything. And they were just seeing how each driver would react in a tight situation, and they help them correct it.
What were we like? What were we like 10 years ago, Steve?
Certainly not as far as we are right now. It's only been in about the past 5 years that we've seen displays that have come out at a consumer price point. Prior to that, the next step up, you know, you were looking at thousands of dollars for a head-mounted display.
Wow.
And the workstation that was necessary to drive or to generate a real-time frame rate in stereo, so a real-time frame rate for both eyes, and it's only been in about the last 5 to 6 years that we've seen such an advancement in the enabling technologies that 20 years ago we would require a workstation about half the size of a refrigerator. These types of simulations can now be done on a smartphone, which is astonishing. And so you can imagine the fidelity and the speed of the simulation, you know, from even a decade ago to now has just, there's been so many major leaps that all of these events happening concurrently has enabled the reemergence of this field.
How dramatic. It really is dramatic. What is fueling the speed in the advancement? Is it humankind? Is it the computer world? What's really pushing this?
So from a consumer side, the entertainment applications are a clear winner.
Okay.
Different games and so on. You know, instead of playing the first-person shooter games on a two-dimensional display, if you're able to surround yourself with this this action, that's, you know, that realism, you know, is very compelling. Especially you're able to do it inside of your home. From an industrial standpoint, using these technologies to solve problems, to increase efficiency of workers, and ultimately benefit the bottom line of a company, this is their primary driving force in the application of these technologies.
Next up, we go to Paul in Morgan, New Jersey. Paul, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for listening.
Sure.
Great show, fantastic. I got a couple giggles there during some of the talk about what is capable of these 3D sets. I've seen some of them that it's totally mind-blowing. It's unbelievable what they're capable of.
It sure is.
The reason why I called is we have a friend of ours. We're up there in a senior group, and we have a fellow. He's 61 years old. We call him Professor Hippie. He had graduated from MIT, and he fell in love with electronics in any way, shape, or form, whether it was communication or a visual aid or whatever. He started making, I guess it would be a prototype of what you're speaking about with the goggles there that you could look into. He would go ahead and film something on his self, on his, you know, his little camera phone there. And then he would take that and put it somehow on a DVD disc, which was about the size of a dime.
God, he was way ahead of time. Paul, stay with us. I'm going to have you wrap up with us when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Steve Oxtokolnis and his book, Practical Augmented Reality. And what's your website, Steve? We've got it linked up, but for people driving, let's see if they can remember it.
PracticalAR.com.
Simple as that. PracticalAR.com. Let's go back to Paul in Morgan, New Jersey. So, Paul, you've got a friend who you think was inventing some of this virtual reality goggle stuff, huh?
Yeah, he, like I said, he had a fascination with electricity and all kinds of things of that matter. His first prototype was he had taken apart, it was a video game. And what he did was he had used, I'm not quite sure what type of game, an Xbox or whatever, but it was something where you put on these goggles and then you looked at the TV set and you would relate back and forth between the two. Well, he thought that he can cut out the middleman, get rid of the TV, and go ahead and just use that. Well, He figured he didn't have the financial backing to go ahead and get green screens and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So what he did was he went and he just sat and he videotaped for 45 minutes straight, sitting on the beach, watching the waves come in. He took that and he put it on a micro disc that he had made in some way, and he also put an injection pack on the side of that he could slide this into that. And once you did, it looked like you were actually sitting on the beach with the ocean breaking before you. And if you had a beer or a drink or a coffee or whatever next to you and you reached to grab it, you could see your hand going and picking up that particular object.
Wow.
And when he called up four or five of us one evening, it was in the middle of the winter, and he says, Friday night, I want you at the house, he says, and I want everybody dressed, he says, in beach attire. So we had no idea what he was talking about, but when Professor Hippie talks, you listen. So we went down there to his apartment, and he had taken one of these, it was, I believe, they use it in business for having multi-conversation voices to, you know, a bunch of people at one time on the phone lines. And he used that to hook up all of these connectors somehow. He fiddled the
genius. In.
And four of us had sitting there with glass, these masks over our eyes, sitting there watching the beach in front of us. And we'd stretch our feet out, and you could see your feet there with short pants on, and we're holding a beer in our hand. And if you looked and turned toward the person next to you, you could see them. They would have the goggles on as well, but you couldn't tell what their perception was compared to what you were, you know, perceiving at the time. And since then, he's come up with a patent, not on the object itself, but something having to do with the particular deal, where he had come across something that would save companies a real lot of time of making all of this things, where he just come up with this one component.
I love that. Steve, it sounds like this guy was one of the first in virtual reality.
Definitely. You know, the caller, he touches on something very interesting in that a lot of the thrust in the entertainment field is on creating experiences that get the adrenaline pumping, you know, that lots of energetic stuff going on and so on. And I would be the first in line to be purchasing simulations that help somebody decompress, you know, with all the tension and everything that's happening around and so on, to be able to put on a head-mounted display and hear and watch the surf roll in. You know, and to, you know, be able to hear, you know, that very visceral sensation that you have just of doing nothing, sitting on the beach, watching things happen like that, bring down the blood pressure, bring down the tension and all that stuff. I think there's a major market for that application of the technologies, as well as those that press in the other direction of excitement and getting the adrenaline running and so on.
Next up, let's go to Carrie in Florida. It is your turn, Carrie. Go ahead.
Oh, hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Got in here a second time. This is pretty cool. I wanted to bring up, like, there could be negative aspects of this, and we really need to, I'm sure, you know, you've thought about this, but like OxyContin, take that for example. You know, it's probably hit the 50-50 point where, you know, it's 50% good and it's 50% bad. And once you start getting over 50% bad, you got to really start thinking about what you got. I mean, I kind of perceive this as, you know, us developing into a society of just fat, lazy people that are on their way to extinction because they can't do enough elbow grease. And, you know, the benefits that come from that are incalculable. You can't even, you know, like you say, model stuff and get it into the virtual reality. You can't model elbow grease. You can't, you know, there's nothing that could really give you that experience. And I'm sure you can get pretty close to it, but, you know, I'll listen to your answer or what you think about this. But, I mean, that's got to be something that's on your mind or in the back of your mind.
Well, that's got to be a danger. It's one of the things we were talking about earlier, Steve, that people wouldn't leave their house very, very interesting that, you know, they would stay home, get the, and keep eating and get fat and out of shape. But you may also have these applications for working out.
Absolutely, there are. There's already, along the entertainment side, there's bikes that you can purchase where you, that come along with the head-mounted display. Start to pedal, and you go through different environments, go up the hills, down the hills, and so on, that that are specifically set up to make exercising more engaging and give you the visual sensation of being in a different environment and so on, that's compelling, that draws you in, that makes you pump your legs harder and so on. And so there's a lot of great applications along these lines that can be had from these technologies. And but to be really honest, if there's dollars to be made, then somebody's going to be making the applications that potentially could make people sit down and become fat and lazy and all that.
Yeah.
All of this steers back to personal responsibility and just grasping that, you know. And for instance, parents, you know, not, you know, limiting, you know, watching, policing the kids and making sure that they're not spending too much time inside of things like this that would take them away from normal life experience that they should be having.
What got you involved in all this, Steve?
George, literally, I got into this field by accident. I was walking around the campus of the University of Washington and stuck my head into a lab. And that's how I got started into it. I literally fell into it just walking around exploring the campus. For others that find this field, you know, from what we've been discussing, that find this field interesting, I would strongly advise background in computing sciences, maybe some aspect of engineering, and then finding an aspect of this field that is particularly interesting and going full bore in that direction. In that, if you aim high and you don't quite hit as high as you're aiming for, you're still going to end up way up there. But this field is wide open for people with computer graphics skills, computer engineering skills, being able to design different sensors, or optical engineers to be able to design a better head-mounted display. There's just so many different areas that people can enter into. And it quite literally, over the next decade, will be redefining how we use computers. Matter of fact, I would even be willing to place a bet that within the next 10 to 15 years, you're going to start to see desktop monitors going away in lieu of being able to wear head-mounted displays, where you'll have virtual monitors, multiple ones hanging out in space in front of you, that will negate the need to have something sitting on your desktop.
What will you use for the mouse? You'll still have a mouse, maybe?
Yeah, there's so this is an interesting question that you ask here, in that human beings were spatial beings. We see, hear, touch, and move through our surroundings in three dimensions, yet many of the interfaces that we use to interact with computers right now are two-dimensional. But in the case of moving a mouse around a two-dimensional surface like your desktop, that in many cases is the most efficient way to interact with the current computing methodologies that we have. But as we start to move away from, for instance, desktop monitors and so on, and start leveraging the strengths of the perceptual system, you know, representing 3D information in 3D as opposed to a 2D representation of it, I genuinely think that you'll start to see more 3D interfaces come out that allow you to more efficiently interact with what you're viewing.
Okay, back to the calls. Charles in Arizona. Go ahead, Charles. Thank you.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
Oh, great. Hey, my question had to do with the state-of-the-art of tactile feedback and say such things as math, like you pick up a virtual object and you could actually maybe feel the weight. And then another idea was that of, say, I wanted to go explore a reef, tropical reef. And so rather than an augmented reality, a remote reality.
You know, Charles, I'm so glad that you called and that you've taken this conversation into away from the visual and the audio side, and
touched on something else that's so important, and that the ability to manually interact with objects that you see inside of these virtual environments is extremely important. It adds that much more of a sense of realism and a sense of immersion into these simulations. And right now, because of the difficulty in mechanically producing different tactile stimuli, or for instance, it's extremely difficult to, for instance, with one system, be able to simulate the texture of the denim of your blue jeans and then moving your hand immediately and simulate the texture of, for instance, a tabletop, being able to feel the wood grain. There's a company in Scotland that is looking at the way that the mechanoreceptors in the fingers, little sensors in your fingers that let you distinguish textures, the way that those receptors fire off different signals that go to the central nervous system. And they're trying to not mechanically reproduce sensations or tactile sensations, but they have, for instance, gloves, entire jackets that you can put on that will stimulate the skin with minute electrical impulses that quite literally will jump over these receptors and simulate that signaling. So for instance, you hold your hands out, you're seeing rainfall inside of the virtual environment, and you can feel the pitter-patter on your hands, or for instance, a butterfly fluttering in your hands. Or even, they've even gone as far as being able to transmit a virtual hug across the Atlantic. So you have somebody on one side, somebody on the other, both of them have the suit on, and you reach out and you hug each other's virtual character, and your muscles are stimulated to actually give you that sensation of being hugged.
So you can actually feel through this too?
Yes, this is a very early stages, but they are working on this to be able to give you a more real, or a more visceral, a real sensation of feeling or having tactile sensations on it. Now, Charles touched on something that, talking about mass, it is very, I don't see a way that you're able to, for instance, pick up a virtual softball, heave it up and down, and feel the mass of the object. But the tactile sensation of it, there will be a point in time where you're eventually able to accurately reproduce that.
Will you be able to play a baseball game virtually and bat and catch and throw?
You can already do that. They already play tennis, virtual golf games, and so on. And so
that would be fun.
But again, it's right now we're using primarily what's called vibrotactile displays. So the same eccentric motors that you will have inside of your cell phone that buzz, it's that type of feedback that you'll get that gives you, you know, a recognition that you've come in contact with a virtual object. But eventually, as these technologies are worked on and people start to apply their knowledge and wisdom as to how to solve these problems, they'll start to close the gap to increased realism.
Stephen, what about boxing? Will you be able to get into a virtual boxing match with somebody?
Quite possibly.
These things I come up with. I'm inventing games as we speak, I guess, huh?
Yeah, you are. You're probably getting a lot of people's brains going, I wonder.
That's right. Get Mike Tyson in the ring. Show you, Mike. Let's go to Devin in Augusta, Georgia, first-time caller. Hi, Dev. Go ahead. Dev, are you with us? Going once, going twice, gone. Let's try Chris in Tampa, Florida. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was curious, what kind of effects will these have on, like, kids' brains? You know, attention deficit disorder, or, you know, back in the 80s, they did study on reflective light versus radiant light, and they found that the kids who watched reflectant light remembered more details, while radiant light actually kind of dumbed them down a little bit.
You ask a very interesting question, and my response to this is that, in large part, we don't know. And part of the reason that we don't know is that up until just the last few years, of these systems were considerably more expensive than they are now, which means that there were fewer systems in circulation. Now that the head-mounted displays have come down to consumer price points and so on, this is starting to enable large-scale investigations to take place
to see whether or not there are perceptual benefits, perhaps some perceptual problems that could be caused by it. And so these are all areas that need investigation, and it's only been recently that the technologies have been available with the performance and at a price point that would allow large-scale studies like this to be done.
There was a cartoon in Japan that caused kids to convulse. It had a flickering to it, and they went into convulsions. Could that happen with the VR?
Absolutely, it can, and any virtual reality headset that you're purchasing these days actually comes with that a warning regarding that. That because of the types of displays that are being used, there is flickering that can be perceived, in particular in the periphery, and this warnings are very clearly given, not only in the packaging but at the start of many of the simulations that just caution people against this.
How much do these headsets cost?
So many of the ones that connect to the PCs right now and so on, the currently available are about between $600 and $800. Within the next several months, the price point is going to be dropping down to about $300 to $500.
That's a big drop.
It is a big drop. And you can even...
Right in time for Christmas.
Yes, and while we haven't discussed it into any great detail, there's you can actually get cardboard, fold-up cardboard displays with pretty inexpensive optics that you can fold up and then download simulations that you run on your cell phone. So you put your cell or your smartphone in as a display device.
Jeez.
And so it, you know, if you've got a smartphone, you can start playing with these things tomorrow for less than $10.
That's not. Is there an app for something like that, Steve?
There's tons of apps that are out there for free that you can download onto your smartphone now and start to, you know, 20 minutes from now, you could be, you know, cruising around inside of different virtual environments, riding virtual roller coasters.
The name of the book is called Practical Augmented Reality. Stephen, thank you so much. Great information. Up next, we're talking about your Akashic Records, from questioning to knowing. Lisa Barnett, back on Coast to Coast.